The beautiful thing is that your temptations, even your lusts, are an invitation to reconnect with your sexuality.
Friends, it's Morgan Snyder, and welcome back to another episode of the Become Good Soil podcast. I'm very filled at the moment with the delight of God to be sitting with my good friend Sam Joelman, who was here for Soulcraft, a series back in episode 91. Sam, welcome back.
Morgan, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Buddy, we have been parallel for decades in this work and in the mission of going after men.
Yeah.
I mean, we have some really historic miles together.
That's right.
And then we just cross over. I hear your name more than most from really good men that are thirsty to become whole, whether they're in your counseling office or in our community, whether it's my son, who you've loved so well, or it's my team, or it's the man that I was on a bike packing trip with last week that was telling how you have transformed his life. And I didn't even know he was your client. Sam, we were young together, and we've been apprenticed in the kingdom in parallel, and here we are in sort of midstream of our becoming and hopefully stewarding our work in the world to help others. It's just a joy and a privilege to be with you.
Morgan, it's so much the same for me in terms of just even hearing, you know, I get to sit with men that experience your retreats and conversations with you and podcasts that you put out, and just the soil that's genuinely tilled in their hearts, and just the rich conversation that flows from that. So, and how the conversation is so aimed already when they come in to want to talk about the things of their heart. So it does feel like fist bumping you a lot in the room. And yes, I mean, I remember meeting you the summer of 1999, which is just so crazy. We were just such young men then.
And we were thirsty for God, and we were knuckleheads.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's been fun to feel that parallel journey. And now into writing. It's just such a neat context to be crossing paths again.
It's beautiful. So I didn't know you were writing this book, The Sex Talk You Never Got. And someone put it on my desk, and I don't know how, and it, you know, an advanced copy somewhere, I guess your publisher. And I just had this grin, and then this gladness. And Sam, my first reaction before even touching the book was, this man has put in the miles. This man has done his own work and hosted space for many people to bring their pain and their story. And this man has authority on what he's talking about. And then it was interesting, you know, the title, The Sex Talk You Never Got. I was really excited because I do so much initiation with young men, and I'm with immersed in high school young men now with my son. And Sherry and I teach a sexual ethics class for TCA seniors. We did it for Joshua's class. That was crazy. Oh, that's so cool. And we're doing it for Abigail's class. I don't recommend it, but I'm really glad we're doing it. And so I was like, oh, this is going to give me coaching. And it has. And yet, Sam, this is a work of art. And this is a substantive book. And I found myself saying, how do I get a case of these? And I will begin to share these first with my son and then my closest friends. And I have to tell you, I read a lot. I don't read a lot of books because I take my time reading one again and again and again. I'm in Hearing God by Willard, who I read 20 years ago. I've read it four times this summer. I'm on my fifth reading. I marinate, and I found myself going, this is a gem to help explore. Actually, the subtitle, the tagline, Reclaiming the Heart of Masculine Sexuality. I mean, that's a bold offer, and this book delivers that. If one were to take in ingest the ideas, the stories, the invitations, the curiosities over time in community with other people to risk bringing this into your marriage, it has the power to be a conduit to reclaim the heart of masculine sexuality. So I want to say, well done. I'm really proud of you. This is needed. And I've not heard in one place the depth and breadth of what you're bringing back as a reclamation for masculine sexuality. So I, by way of intro, I'm so honored and I'm excited to hear your thoughts on it.
Morgan, thank you. That is a very generous introduction. And I am so grateful the book met you in that way. And I mean, you are being generous with me. And I do hope that the book comes as a, you know, I've made it a mantra in my life to smoke what I sell.
Yes. Yes. Love it.
And so, you know, that I'm not bringing something I haven't let wreck me. Mm-hmm. And I will even say, you know, in writing the book, there were layers of like outwriting my own growth.
Yeah.
And being like, oh man, and needing to go get my own care. So I went back to counseling in the process of writing this book of like, oh, wow, that's stirring something in me that I need to go address. And so I hope that I've let this book wreck me before I'm inviting men to let it wreck them or invite them somewhere, right? Yeah. It's not meant to be a violent book, of course, but you know, an invitation and maybe an undoing in a certain way. But I also hope the book is a conversation, genuinely, that it's not a, hey, I'm the expert guide, just do what I say. This is your sexuality, and it's so important in the category of sexuality that you're checking in with, does this resonate with you? You know, it's your sexuality given to you by God. And it's so important that you're just in conversation with your sexuality. Sexuality is one of those categories that you can't learn about sort of cognitively. Like, you know, maybe you can learn about math or, you know, rock strata or tax law in a very cognitive only way.
Yes.
But sexuality is a category that as you're my sense is as you're learning about it, you're in your body. Your sexuality is going to be talking to you. Your body is going to be talking to you as you're reading. There's something about it that it seems like you can't learn from it disembodied. It has to be embodied. So I intend for this to be a journey in a conversation book, not just a, hey, here's some tips and techniques, so to speak.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I think I'd love to maybe start off with a dilemma and a desire. I think you do a beautiful job of setting the stage with two ideas. And so I'd love to just reflect on those from the introduction, where you say you believe that all men have disowned their sexuality to one degree or another. They push it into the shadows and we keep it hidden and out of sight. And you share that every part of our personality that we do not love will become hostile to us. And so these shadow parts of us, our shadow selves, have a way of jumping us when we least expect it, asking us to pay attention. I just think it's interesting where you're naming that we all share in common to one degree or another a pushing away, a disowning of our sexuality, and a separating from it. And I want to get to part two of the hope, but react to that.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it, if there's, you know, if there's something in your family or, you know, your workplace that you just know we don't talk about this, right? Like,
so we're the elephant in the room.
Yeah, it's the elephant in the room. Don't bring this up. We're all going to walk around it and not talk about it. You know, there's this implicit sense of shame about that thing. So, you know, let's not mention this. So you think about it, right? The sex talk you never got, the title of my book. Most men that I've walked with did not get, either didn't get a sex talk at all, or got something that was pretty basic, right? Maybe a basic and often shoddy anatomy lesson.
Yes. Yep.
And then a quick purity lecture of like, hey, don't screw it up in some way. And that's kind of it, right? Like, hey, covered the birds and the bees, we're good. But there's this, there's no ongoing dialogue that follows. And I think it sets the stage of like, there's something shameful inherently about sexuality. It's why we don't talk about it. I think that alone, not just also what happens in your story in terms of other shameful experiences or traumatic experiences, but just the fact that there isn't a formational ongoing conversation, I think casts this pale of shame over our sexuality. It's what we don't talk about. We don't talk about it in the church. And so I think, yes, most men then live with sexuality is something that I have to kind of keep hidden, or it's not brought out. It operates over here, often in isolation. And again, this is apart from any sin, any other experiences that happen in the story, which just only add often to the sense of shame. That leads men to separate from their sexuality. It only comes out in like, you know, locker room talk or sex jokes. But the implication is this should just work and you need to figure it out on your own. And if it doesn't just work, which it doesn't for any man, it doesn't just work. It doesn't just run itself, right? It's a part of you that needs formation, just like everything else. And it leaves men to push this part of them into the shadows. And I think all of us live with some sense of disconnection or separation, lack of integration from our sexuality. But it's not just going to sit over there. The beautiful thing is that your temptations, even your lusts, are an invitation to reconnect with your sexuality. And I think so many men end up, you know, trying to repent in their repentance of lust. I think a lot of men end up trying to repent of having a body. Obviously, Paul called us to kill the flesh. He's not saying kill the body. And I'm inviting men, what does it look like for you to have a conversation, to get curious about your lust, not just shut it down? And all the things that stir in your sexuality, just shut it down, right? Like, oh my gosh, it's the half step from sin, right? As purity culture might say, or a message of purity might say. So I'm inviting men to be curious about what stirs in your sexuality. It's trying to come home to you. It's trying to come back and be integrated with you. And that's a conversation. Your shame is an invitation. As much as it's an attack, right? You can turn the table on your shame and say, whoa, why that shame? Why that message? Why that accusation? What does that tell me about what my sexuality has gone through? My story of sexual formation.
Yeah, it's really good, Sam. I think if there were two words that come to my heart that are sort of the banner of your invitation as it relates to reclaiming masculine sexuality in its sort of true design, their curiosity and kindness.
Yeah.
I love the theme of whatever that deviant behavior, whatever that misstep, whatever that hidden isolated piece is, can we safely move through shame to get to curiosity, and what role does kindness play? So I'd really like to get to those two words.
Yes.
But before we do, I want to back up and get into, we talked about the dilemma. This invitation is very compelling that you offer, where you say simply, I want to help you recover sexual innocence and sexual aliveness. And those also are very key words. I mean, when we just think of innocence, right? We know that in our youth, and we taste that in brief moments in adulthood where the young place in us gets to play, for example, and that aliveness, that feeling of being alive. I mean, I was on a bikepacking trip last week, and we were descending a 4,000-foot descent. And we were hipping and hollering, and we were kids. And there was innocence, and there was aliveness. And to your point, there was a lot of formation to become the kind of person that can bike pack 26,000 feet of elevation gain, self-supported in wilderness, but we got back to innocence and aliveness. And so you share sex holds a connection to all the awe and wonder you have, not just for other human bodies, but also for the beauty of the world. Just recovering the awe would be a great accomplishment. But I want more than helping you recover something. We are not going to simply talk about sex. We're going to bless your sexuality. And I just want to pause and say, in this book, Sam, you're naming blessing our sexuality at every age, at every stage, past, present, and future.
Yes.
You go on to say your sexuality is a good part of you. It's the artwork of God declared good on the sixth day of creation. A lot has happened since that original blessing, both in the story of the world and the story of your life. We all plunge with the world into sin and darkness, muck and mire, pain and sorrow. But we need to talk about that story, not just the story of a fall long ago, but the way we still suffer today. Despite the fallenness, you need to know your sexuality never lost its original blessing or its capacity to return to original glory with the help of God. Believe it or call me a liar, but your sexual aliveness and innocence can be recovered. It's actually one of the most important things you can do to change the world for good. Wow. Tell me more. I want that. I want that. And note to friends, read the book. But Sam, while we have the honor of your attention, as you hear that, and as you sit in your own body, and the story of thousands of women and men, what do you notice comes up for you?
Yeah, you know, a little backstory in the publishing process. You know, I really wanted to make the subtitle Rousing the Heart of Masculine Sexuality. Mm. And we settled for Reclaiming to be a bit more, I don't know, tame to the reader who's seeing it on a shelf. Rousing felt a little scandalous to my publisher. And I respect that was a marketing move. But I've always held in my heart, I am trying to rouse something in you. And I think it is that innocence and aliveness. And, you know, it feels at times almost impossible to reimagine what could be good about masculine sexuality, right? That it is a good thing, it's artwork that God wanted to put on display to mirror his glory in the world. And you think, like, where is that in our day and age, right? We've come through, you know, the Me Too movement and the Church Too movement and this wake of harm done in the name of male sexual desire. And it would seem like there's nothing good here.
Right.
Right. This is inherently monstrous. And that stirred me so much to write this book of like, no, there is artwork here. And it may feel so lost personally. Mm-hmm. It may feel so lost in the world, but I'm trying to rouse something in men, this sense of innocence and aliveness. And, you know, I think a lot of men that I sit with feel like, man, I've seen too much.
Yep.
I know too much.
Yep.
I've experienced too much. I've done too much. Innocence. Are you crazy?
Yeah, it's long gone.
It's long gone, right? Like maybe I can stop sinning or I can behave. I can kind of rein in some of my lust, right? But, or I can find a way to be a good man, sort of, you know, and that's kind of about how much they bring hope for themselves in their sexuality. Mm. But I'm saying no. Your innocence is not about naivete. It's not that you need to return to unknowing all of these things, you can stand. And, you know, Jesus said, you know, be shrewd as a snake, innocent as a dove. You could be shrewd in the context of being very aware of evil, both in your, maybe your own heart, your own story, your own life, sin, but also be innocent. I think that's a lie that evil holds over us in our sexuality, is there is no way I can be drawn back to being innocent. I can maybe behave, but innocence? So I wanted to go for the heart of it.
I'm listening as the heart of the person out there that's with us in the conversation. I think of the men, as you said, think of what I've done, what I've seen, how I've acted, how I've acquiesced. And I'm also thinking about the women sitting there going, I don't even know if I want to listen to, right? This mm-hmm. is a deep waters because I have been harmed.
Yep.
I have been used. Yeah. I've been an object of his need, which you talk about beautifully. And I've been misunderstood. And frankly, I don't know if I want it, right? Like it's dangerous for him. It's dangerous for me. It's precarious for all of us. And so with that, one of the ideas that you share that I think would be really helpful to hear you talk about is you have a bold idea where you say, you know, sex is not about sex. Yeah. And sexuality is deeper than sexuality. And there's something that the soul is made for, that it's reaching for, that it's looking for, that it needs, that it can receive, that is some sort of fundamental foundation that helps to reclaim wholehearted sexuality. And you talk about beauty, and we have shared experiences, very particularly with our families at U Valley Park, right between our two houses. sex is not about sex. For our listeners that are going, oh my gosh, I'm already thinking about all this stuff in my sexual history, drop us down a level below sex and help us understand the power and necessity of beauty.
You know, as I say in the book, there's the mechanics of sex and there's the poetics of sex. And poetics is, the poetics of sex is a phrase I'm borrowing from a writer, Esther Perel, a Jewish woman who writes on sexuality. And, you know, we get the mechanics, the plumbing,
mm-hmm.
right? And you figure that out in the birds and the bees conversation. And that's often where the sex talk sort of begins and ends, yep. right? How it all fits together. But there's what animates it.
Mm-hmm.
What's driving this connection, right? This moment of coming together between lovers. Sex always lives in a story. Mm. It's never just a body function, right? Like breathing or sneezing. You know, those are functions that are, you know, have utility to them. There's not a lot of poetics to drinking water. It's a drive in your body. Thirst is a need, you know, like oxygen is a need, right? You just need it. It doesn't have much script to it. Again, maybe there's a bit to breathing exercises, right? In terms of learning how to regulate your body emotionally, right? Maybe we can add a layer to breathing. But sex isn't like that. It's not a drive in the body for survival, meaning like you need it to live. And again, it may feel like a very strong desire in your body. It can be very gripping and overwhelming at times, but you won't die without sex. No one's ever died without sex. So it is a desire that you can relate to. We have it mislabeled as sex drive, yeah. and it's really sexual desire. It's not a drive. which is really good news, I think, in that you can actually have a conversation with your sexuality. Mm. You can relate with it. It's not there to overtake you. You know, without oxygen, you will get very desperate very fast to breathe, and it will overtake you. Thankfully, sex as a desire is something you can relate with a lot more. So I'm inviting men into a conversation about what's the story of your sexuality, what's been the formation. You know, even though we may not have gotten a sex talk, there are things that have shaped you. You have a sexual formation, you have a story, and you know, maybe all those things that are starting, that you're naming, right, that are starting to speak, the dread or the, oh my gosh, I, like, innocence, like there's so much that you have no idea that I've suffered or experienced or gone through, that all of that story stuff, I think, is what I'm inviting you to engage, to recover your sexuality to its right story. Meaning there is a story that has held it, and are you aware of it? And what's the story that's been narrating your sexuality? What has shaped you?
Can you give me an example of a story that shaped sexuality? So I have friends that got married last week and they went on their honeymoon and praying over their sex life. And I'm aware that could go really well, or it could go really terribly, or something in between. And most stories I hear about sex on a honeymoon aren't that great. Mm-hmm. Can you give an example of how sex is storied and what you mean by that? And therefore, like, how I can think about sexuality as embodied in a story. Mm.
So I'll share part of my story.
Great.
Amanda and I are newly married, a couple years into marriage, and there's enough to suffer some patterning, right? To have something repetitive happening mm-hmm. between us to the point of causing pain. And this pattern emerges for us where that Amanda starts to speak up to, which is whenever she tries to move towards me with affection or even sexual desire, meaning she rolls over to cuddle next to me, or even just gives me a hug in the kitchen, I stiffen like a board.
Mm.
Something in my body is talking, and literally I stiffen like a board, and she gets the message, which is back away. And so she backs off, but feels really rejected, of course.
And let me add, in that moment from your book, you talk about Samanda, you know, and Sam and Amanda falling in love. Relationally, you guys are connected. You guys know each other's hearts. You have a beautiful soul connection in your relationship.
Yeah.
But you're describing sexually, here I am turning into a board. So there's a huge inconsistency.
Right. Yeah. This is a woman I am passionate about. Like, you know, I'm in love with her. I'm over the moon for her. But then why is my body having this reaction?
Yes.
Right. And I don't know.
Wow. Okay.
Right. And we're not talking about this.
Yes.
Right. It's not like she's speaking up in the moment because she feels rejected and ashamed. Like, what's wrong with me that I can't rouse him to affection with me? And so she finally braves it. This is maybe a year and a half or two into marriage, and she finally braves it with me and says, I feel so rejected every time I try to initiate affection or even sex with you. You bristle. It feels like it always has to be on your terms. So that was the reverse, is if I initiated, fine, it's fine.
Yes.
There wasn't a block. And I was like, I have literally no idea what's going on in my body. And so go to counseling and start to discover as I start to listen to my body and just start trying on words, right? Guess is often a good step. Like, guess, what do you think is going on?
It feels generous.
Yeah, it is a good starting point because often your guess is arising from intuition you just haven't trusted.
Yes.
So I start to say, well, it feels like she wants to devour me. Like, I don't trust feminine desire. I'm afraid of being consumed. And that became this huge door to my own sexual formation, my own story of how I experienced women.
So you're saying it showed you it was even beyond sex in your sex history. It was about your relationship with feminine.
Yes.
So even tying into your relationship with mom, for example, it's far beyond the bedroom.
Yes. Right. It wasn't about Amanda as much as it was about woman. And this way that in my story, mother wound, other parts of my story, this sense of women want to take and consume. And my counselor said to me, you're a misogynist. Like you have made a blanket vow against women, which is that women want to take from you and that you better maintain control to be able to feel safe.
Can you just say that again? Because that's such a concise summary of sexuality is storied, and you came to this moment of high clarity that describes why you're turning into a board in bed with this woman who loves you and has your best interests in mind. Say that again, and what was the sort of summary?
So beginning to understand my body was living the story that women are not safe. And I had made a vow against women, which my counselor is confronting, which is you've made a vow, a misogynistic, woman-hating vow that all women are just devouring. They want to take from you. And he was right. He said it with the kindest eyes of like, this is the story your body is holding. Now, again, behind that is pain.
Yes.
And so it's not just that I'm a jerk.
Yes.
And again, if I perpetuated that, certainly I would be a jerk. And there's ways that obviously I'd been a jerk to my wife in resisting her, but it's coming to connect to my body is holding a story that I didn't even know how to put to words yet. So coming to accept this dance, right? All sexuality lives in a story. So this dance between Amanda and I is telling a story. And it took being curious about it. So going through then the grief work of engaging my story and, you know, confessing and repenting of the vow against women, right? And this beautiful shift happened in our marriage. And again, it's not like it clicked on, right? It took a lot of years for this shift to relaxing into my body, welcoming Amanda's desires, doing repair work with Amanda around the harm. And obviously there are parts of her story that my bristling like a board played into for her. So her having to engage just the receiving end of that and her becoming open and brave again with me, with desire. And that's obviously her story to tell, but it took a number of years for us to get brave with sexual desire and for there to be this real, you know, as I say in the book, the story that sex is meant to live in is romance. It's love. It's lovemaking. And it's play. It is the play of love. Sex is a place our love is meant to play. Again, not the only place.
Yes.
Right? You can play in all kinds of ways in your romance, right? But romance has to have places of play, of commingling, of desire and passion and lightness and effervescence and connection. It took a long time for our sex to start to really step out of the stories we'd grown up in, right? The stories our sexuality had been formed by, to step into the story of sex that it was meant for, romance.
Yeah, it's really, really helpful because it's concrete and it's operational. As you're sharing that, Sam, where I'm going is, wow, okay. sex deserves some time, attention, curiosity. Like, rather than something I'm entitled to or I'm avoiding, this is an area that needs some care. And in the book, I love your invitation in that spirit to say, our self-regulation is vital. And it fits so in alignment with Become Good Soil and this idea of stewarding power, of how do we steward power entrusted to our care? And you give some really practical sort of advice of the idea that when I come to sexuality with my wife, don't come in exhausted. Don't come in with a strong emotion like anger or resentment or denial or requirement. Don't come in needy. Like there, and again, we're human, and this is a trial and error and experimentation over time. But I really appreciate, so often Sherry and I collapse into bed and want to connect. And we have the gift of having cultivated beautiful sexuality, but just in the fatigue of kids, and I notice I can bring my need more than is actually helpful to the relationship, and then triggers our sexual story. So speak about that idea of stewarding not just our power, but our power expressed in our emotional, our mental, our spiritual presence when we're moving towards a partner.
Yeah, it's so important to the conversation. You know, I had a really wise woman for a client, and she's given me permission to share this, who said, I always knew what kind of day my husband had based on how he had sex with me that night.
It's amazing.
And there were ways she would say it, there were nights where it felt like I was the thing he had to conquer to be able to feel like he had a good day. So sex felt like I'm a thing he's conquering, not he's making love to me, right? But he's getting that fulfillment of accomplishment through sex. And she said it felt awful. It wasn't lovemaking. So I think sex can be this beautiful place of comfort, right? It can be a beautiful place of release. It can be a beautiful place of play and athletically, right? It is a physicality, athletic experience.
Absolutely.
So it is okay and good that you feel comfort and you feel connection and you feel closer through sex with your partner. All of that is good. It's not saying that in itself those things are bad fruit, but I am saying sex is something you're meant to rise to, not collapse into. I think, you know, a lot of times when men say, gosh, sex feels like a need, oftentimes what I sense is the real need there is some sort of emotional regulation, right? That the act of, you know, going through your arousal cycle in your body will bring you some relaxation.
Absolutely.
Right? Your body will dump relaxants and dopamine and serotonin and all the good chemicals that you want will get dumped into your bloodstream. So you will feel some body tension release. And again, I think it's good. God
yes.
made it that way.
Right.
That you know, that you have this kind of post-coital wow.
Totally.
Right? To sex. As sort of with any athletic experience as well. But I think a lot of guys end up sort of hijacking their own sexual arousal cycle for comfort, right? Like a pattern of pornography use and masturbation or masturbation in itself. I think a lot of times that's driven by just, I don't know how to regulate my body. I need comfort right now, and I don't know what to do to get comfort in my body.
So you're saying, tell me if this is accurate, something like pornography or masturbation is a reach for something external to help alleviate an internal dysregulation, because I don't have the internal tools to regulate myself. And so I have to reach to something external for something that actually, as I mature and become wholehearted, can become an internal regulation. Is that fair?
Yes.
And even like when you're describing in sex, the process of sexual intimacy, like you described, there is the, you know, this idea of foreplay, of its relational connection building up, where, as you say, the peak of sexual maturity is not when our bodies are just biological phenomena, you know, spitting out hormones in high school, but it's actually cultivating connection and the ability to regulate so that I, for example, can stay emotionally engaged, physically engaged, but manage my arousal on a pace that allows my wife, Sherry, to come into the fulfillment of her mm-hmm. arousal. Mm-hmm. And together, we get to experience the buildup, the climax, and the post-sex enjoyment of just relaxation. Like that is a process of regulation that you're talking about, a soul cultivating regulation affects our sexual regulation and actually can help heal our dysfunctional ways of reaching for regulation outside of our body.
Right. Yes. Well said. So there's a researcher, Alexandra Katahakis, I think I'm saying her name right, who described in her research men, she did research on sex addiction, and she described that there were men that were essentially using even partnered sex mm-hmm. with their spouse for auto-regulation, meaning the goal wasn't I'm open to you and I'm connecting with the mystery of who you are and we're playing, right? And yes. there's this intimacy and connection and I'm paying attention to your body. And
I'm willing to say, to at your no, I'm willing to stop.
Exactly. Right. To say anybody can speak up and end it if it's not, if something's painful is happening or this isn't working, right? To where there's a connection happening, right? We're in relationship.
Yes.
And this is play, right? Kind of like, you know, which if you watch children play, they naturally do, which is they speak up.
Yes.
Right? They inherently know the language of consent, mm. right? Hey, do you want to play? Mm. Right? Is what my 7-year-old asked me, you know, virtually every day. And in other words, what's he doing? He's asking for consent, right? Do you want to play with me? Right? There's this openness. And then they speak up like, oh, I don't want to do that. Or, hey, that hurts. Or, right, children know how to play like this with conversation and relationship. Now, you translate that, right, into the play of sex in the adult world. Yes, it's meant to be this, I'm staying in tune to you, and I'm also aware of your pleasure, right, your wife's pleasure.
Yes.
And knowing how to regulate my body rather than being driven, right? You think back to that man, the husband of my client. You know, there was a sense of she was not the point.
Yes.
The point was get released.
Yes.
And, you know, you think about what would it have looked like if that man, rather than just being driven towards sex, had just sat down and had a conversation with his wife about his day, right? And just had a chance to process, mm-hmm. like, man, it was a really hard day. It felt like I got all losses today and no wins, right? Like everything was against me. I felt mm-hmm. defeated, right? Like, just futility all day. What would it have looked like if he had let a good conversation regulate his body, mm. right? Or a good conversation with God, right? Maybe not his wife or a friend. What, you mm. know, what would that have allowed in to show up in him rather than all of that energy for release and comfort being driven towards sex?
That right, it's almost like that's the only outlet he has. right? Yeah. In other words, he hasn't gone through the formation as to become a wholehearted, mature man. You talk about in the book, like, it's almost like he's bringing a boy to the bedroom.
Yeah.
Right? And let's just sort of make up a story. I'm angry. I felt diminished. I felt like no one respects me. I feel bad. I want to feel good.
Uh-huh.
I need to feel good. I need sex. This is how I can feel good. Uh-huh. So I'm going to use her to have sex. And I have a right to it. It's just a very immature boy, adolescent-centered view,
uh-huh.
instead of, like, you know, it actually ties us in the book in chapter 8, this beautiful language. You talk about the aroused life and cultivating the lover within, and you use the language of sexual self-care. And, you know, you talk, Sam, about that all of life is not sexual, but all of life is sensual. And sensuality is the bedrock of our sexuality. So just taking that big idea, not all of life is sexual, but all of life is sensual. Sensuality is the bedrock of sexuality. Is it fair, Sam, to say there are ways to cultivate the aroused life, a life of sensuality that has nothing to do with sex?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I can give myself as an example here. In the last few weeks, the start of school, us ending summer, running Camp Jolman for my three boys, right? Like, the exhaustion of all of that, and plus releasing a book and running a counseling practice and all of the demands of life. Like, I've lived very sensually deprived of beauty. Like, I haven't been out in beautiful places, like out into the mountains, or partaking of even like a sunset.
Yes.
Feels like, man, I'm not paying attention to just the daily gift of sunsets and sunrises, right? And the beauty of those. I'm just doing. I'm getting a bunch of stuff done. And I noticed this push in me to, I could feel like, man, I want sex. And feeling almost that childish thing, right? Of like, this feels close to being petulant. Mm. And so checking back in with my heart of like, what's going on, and recognizing, man, I have not self-cared well around my need for healthy sensuality in these last few weeks. Like, I'm putting it all in the field and not taking my timeouts, my breaks, right? So I, last weekend, went fly fishing with a buddy, and it's amazing how just the sensuality of fly fishing, the beauty of being out in the mountains, in the river, catching fish, spending time with God, having connection with this buddy. I mean, that filled my tank in a way that I was like, oh, that's what actually I was asking sex to be the only answer for, right? Is that sex is the only place I allow myself sensuality and beauty and being off the clock, right? Like, work hard, play hard, but this is the only place I'll play.
And by nature, she becomes objectified, right?
Like, right.
Not consciously, but it's like, if that's your only outlet, then she's the object that either supports or is in opposition to your well-being.
Right.
Which is just, over time, can be catastrophic. Like, I mean, I'm thinking of one of my all-time favorite quotes for a sort of a fundamental idea of reclaiming masculine sexuality is when Buechner was in Bermuda, Frederick Buechner, and he fell in love in a moment with an 18-year-old gorgeous woman. And in his late 50s, he was reflecting on that moment. And he realized, it wasn't her, it was the idea. And it wasn't in her, but through her.
Yeah.
And he said, it was the beauty I longed for beyond the beauty I longed for in her. Something was beckoning, and it took decades to understand she was a beacon, but she wasn't the source, and therefore she wasn't the requirement. And the hope is that when you know it's not the thing, but it's what's coming through the thing, and ultimately the thing is God, the opportunities are infinite in our fulfillment.
Yeah.
of that desire. Like, I think about the early days, you know, you're in this stage. We're a little bit ahead of you. And we had the littles and it was crazy. And I was becoming a bow hunter. And we shared some of these early experiences together. Mm-hmm. And I remember that most of my wife's friends resented their husbands for going out hunting, for adventuring, because the needs were vast, the money was tight, there wasn't margin emotionally, and he's leaving. And I remember the grace that Sherry would grant me to say, I trust God is in this. And so I would receive the gift and I would go on an extended hunt each fall. And what I noticed, Sam, something was happening in my body that I didn't understand at the time, but I was being saturated by beauty. Yeah. Because, you know, archery, Colorado, public land, you know, bugling, elk, and you're rhythming with the animals. So you sleep in the hot of the afternoon, but it's sunrise, it's sunset every day, tuning into smells and quaking aspens and napping under canopies of flourishing, virility, decadence, abundance, feasting. And here I was, short on money, short on time, short on ability in the field to harvest an elk. And I would come home full. I noticed, Sam, my movement towards Sherry shifted, which now I can name as this fundamental sense of, I have enough, how can I love you? From, I have lack, I need you to satisfy me. Mm-hmm. And it was so deep and visceral, I couldn't even get the words at the time of why I love hunting, but I just knew it had nothing to do with hunting.
Sam, this is a deeply meaningful conversation, and I'm so grateful that you would take the time to settle in with me to explore some of these deep dynamics of healthy masculine sexuality. We covered a lot of ground, and in some ways, this is still prologue for where I would love to take us and invite you to share by way of some questions. So what I'd love to do is pause here and let this be a portion for episode one, and I'd love to come back for a part two in the series. And so, friends, my invitation is to grab a copy of this book. I can't remember another book in the last 10 years that I found myself saying, every man and every woman that I love could deeply benefit from this book. To understand masculine sexuality, for men to know our own soul, and for women to understand this other species and share in that miracle of validation, in that every human being is longing to know and be known. There's just so much here that can be cherished and understood and oriented towards in order that we can become more loving, wholehearted humans, particularly in relationships between men and women. So my encouragement is grab a copy of this book wherever books are sold, and you can get it through Church Source and get it at quantity. I know I bought a box and got a large discount for books to give away because I just know that I'll be giving this book away to many for many years. So to close this first episode, I want to return to that last idea that, Sam, you and I were talking about. There are two fundamental postures for a man to come towards a woman in sexual engagement. And one is, I have enough. I'm full. I'm well. And out of this abundance, my desire is to come and offer strength in the service of love. The other fundamental posture is I come bringing my need, and I'm looking for you, for another person to fill my need, satisfy my need, and I come more as a consumer than a lover. Sam, as we've discussed this just evocative conversation, I find some exposure of the different parts of me that can identify with those different ways of moving towards Sherry, the woman I love in sexual intimacy, and frankly, how I relate towards simply feminine in either being one offering strength in the service of love out of fullness and or offering consumption and need out of a place of fundamental lack. And so friends, in our last 90 seconds, and perhaps this week between this episode and the next release of the following episode, which will actually be 2 weeks from now, my encouragement to you is spend some time with those two ways of relating. Notice what percentage of your sexual intimacy or simply you're relating to feminine love. Do you find you're moving in one of the two sort of main energies? And ask your soul, what's that about? Invite God into those places to identify what's the predominant way I move, or what circumstance or situation caused me to move differently towards women. And then for you women listening, it's a really good honest inventory to say, what's it like to be with the man in whom I share sexual intimacy? How do I find him relating to me? And it might be a beautiful, challenging, but redemptive space to engage with together. So friends, let's take our 90 seconds and let's consider, how are we in relating to the opposite sex? And what is the energy in which we move? And what does God want to reveal in this moment? Take some time as we play the gentle background music, and it's an honor and privilege to be with you here for another Become Good Soil podcast. We're so excited, Sherry and I, to dive into a new year, and we have a deep excitement for the many series coming up and interviews and just simply deep dives into apprenticeship as queens and kings in God's kingdom. So thank you for the privilege of sharing your time with us. We consider it an honor. Let's take 90 seconds and we'll be back together for part two with Sam Jolman. Thanks, Sam.